The Portfolio Doctors on KCBQ is sponsored by Mr. Credit San Diego.
Next on KCPQ, stay tuned for the Portfolio Doctors, Dan Osgood and Stephen Vick, investment advisor representatives for their respective investment firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed on the Portfolio Doctors are their own and do not reflect those of ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management Company LLC, or this radio station. The following information is for educational purposes only. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Welcome to the Portfolio Doctors on News Talk AM 1170 KCBQ. Your financial future depends on making sound investment decisions. Make sure you get accurate information and a weekly checkup from a source you trust. The Portfolio Doctors will see you now. Live in studio, here are Dan Osgood and Steve Bick, the Portfolio Doctors.
Welcome to another edition of The Portfolio Doctors. My name is Dan Osgood.
And I'm Steve Bick.
And we are here to make you look at things a little bit differently when it comes to financial media, making financial decisions, and just doing what's right for yourself. We try to get that message across by bringing up different topics from time to time. And with what's going on currently in the markets, there's starting to be more talk again of inflation as the supposed numbers that are being released by the government entities are indicating that there is growth taking place. So if that's the case with low rates, one should expect inflation, correct?
I think that, yeah, the discussion is with low rates, lots of money pumped into the economy globally, that inflation has to rear its head, but the issues are, and this is really where the concern is that it looks like there still isn't any, and there's a lot of discussion as to whether this lack of inflation will lead to deflation.
Right. I recently read an article where the whole article was emphasizing, oh, I don't think inflation's going to be here. Deflation's a much bigger concern.
Way bigger. Well, deflation is way more of a concern than inflation ever is. And for the simple reason that it's really hard to get out of a deflationary spiral. And What deflation is, obviously, just to our listeners, it's the complete opposite of inflation. So inflation, as everyone knows, prices keep going up, right?
Right. On virtually everything.
Everything, you would think.
But just the cost of living is more expensive.
Correct.
From day to day.
And the term for that is inflation.
Right.
So the opposite, which I don't know if we've had that in this country ever. I don't know. That's something
I've been trying
not since
to
I've been here.
Recall, and I don't ever recall.
But anyway, so it's a little bit of an unknown entity to most Americans. They can't really wrap their heads around it. But deflation means that prices are actually going down,
okay,
not up.
Right.
Things are getting cheaper every day.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it does sound good. The problem with deflation is if things are constantly getting cheaper, then why are you going to spend money tomorrow? If you can hold out for a month,
right,
it'll be cheaper in a month than it is tomorrow.
Probably most easily relatable thing would be if you're in the market for a new car.
Right.
Why buy it today? Because they're having a sale when you know if you wait just another month.
Correct.
They're going
to continue
to have a sale.
Actually, it'll be a better one.
Right.
So
whether they want to or not.
Yeah. It takes a change in mindset for the consumer, which will probably take some time if it ever does happen in America for people to really grow into this whole deflationary mindset. But in Japan, as an example, where they've pretty much had deflation for 20, 30 years, it's sort of the norm. Mm-hmm. And this is why they just cannot get that economy stimulated, because people just don't spend money. Why are you going to spend money when it's constantly getting cheaper? You'd rather hang on. Every single day, that dollar in your wallet's getting stronger and stronger and stronger.
I wonder if that wouldn't be very difficult here in the United States, because we're such a instant gratification society.
Right.
People, regardless of if that is the situation where things are getting cheaper, I think the mentality as a whole is I'm still going to buy it because I want it today. I don't want to wait, even though I know it's going to be cheaper.
I would think so, and I agree with that. But I think the issue is that Japan recently, and I don't know how much our listeners actually follow the macroeconomic environment, but a couple of weeks ago, the Japanese government essentially said, we're going to make the Fed's money printing look small.
Right.
And this is a tiny little island in the middle of nowhere. Admittedly, the economy is the third largest in the globe, but still it shouldn't be able to support $740 billion in money printing a year. I mean, there's just no way.
Right.
And a lot of that money is now not only going to be left to support Japan, it's going to be exported out to the rest of the world, and they're going to buy stocks globally with it and all this stuff. And so what the fear is that, while I understand what you're saying about the Americans, we want it now, we want to get immediate, you know, recognition for our stuff, Japan is sort of exporting their deflation problems to the rest of the world now. And so maybe, yeah, we do want it now, but if prices just keep falling. So, yeah, we all rush out and buy the bargain, let's say, on Cyber Monday or Black Friday.
Right.
But then it comes January and, hey, there's a better deal than we had in Cyber Monday. And then the next thing, you know, July comes around and it's even cheaper. At some point in time, the mindset changes. And I think it would take a long time for America to get there. But that's the concern. And the concern is, how do you pull yourself out of that? And if you look at the U.S., with all this money printing and all this stimulus they've done, they've tried desperately to try and expand the economy. And one way you do it is to inflate the economy. If the prices are going up, costs more, businesses make more money, everybody's making more money. And the major benefit is that your debt level is stationary. Whereas the values go up, the debt doesn't move because it doesn't ratchet up with the value of the asset. So it makes the debt more manageable. And with deflation, of course, it's the opposite of that, where if all prices are going down, asset prices are going down, your house was worth $1 million, next year it's worth $950,000.
So kind of what we went through in 08, 09 with real estate prices dropping like a rock.
Yep.
But
your debt's stuck.
With everything. So
everything.
If you have an auto loan, your car is worth a lot less, which
that's normal.
The reality is if you buy a new car, it's immediately worth less than what you finance.
I know.
So that's probably no big change there.
Yeah.
But with a home, that's very detrimental.
Very.
And
any other debt you've got, like credit card debt, all that stuff, you know. And so it gets stuck, and so your payments become a bigger and bigger, because when I'm talking deflation, I'm not just talking about asset deflation. Wages go down. Mm-hmm. So you earn less, but your debt burden still
stays
the same. So that's where the debt starts creeping in, and that's where people now actually have no money to spend. So prices are getting cheaper, but they don't really have it because the debt's just sucking up all of their cash out of their pockets, right? And this is what the problem is. So with all of this money that the Fed's pumped into the economy, the only thing that's really inflated has been the value of stocks and, in some cases, the value of housing.
Right.
But nothing else. They haven't managed to stimulate the economy, because if they had, we'd have full employment levels, wages growth would be huge, new housing construction would be off the chart. You'd see a lot more faster increase in the cost of things. But, I mean, right now we've got things like, you know, oil's dropped like a stone. We've got, almost $1.50 cheaper at the gallon gallon.
I paid under $3 a gallon this week.
Where did you go?
Well,
I need to go there.
I use a Ralph's card, so I got a
20. Oh, okay.
But it was just barely over $3.
Okay, well, there you go. But so we've got these things that are pushing down inflation, and people are getting used to that. This is good, but you know, we don't want to tip the scales and head into a deflationary environment, which ultimately is really just a recession.
Right, just a very long one that's much harder to get out of than your ordinary.
Because the problem is, how do you get out? Well, you get out by printing money, cutting interest rates to zero. And this is, we've done all that already.
We're already there.
Yeah. So the only thing you've got left in your quiver, in your bow, which would, I think, be great, would be to hack taxes down.
Yes.
Because that instantly puts money in people's pockets, right? But now you've got a huge budget deficit.
Right.
And huge.
We've seen many politicians run on a campaign that they're going to cut taxes, and for some reason that never happens.
No.
So I have a hard time believing.
Well, it's because the size of the government keeps getting bigger.
Right.
We've got a huge government that could ease how much fat could be trimmed off the government.
Well, they proved that what's it called? The when the government shut down, what did they call that?
Oh, the moratorium or something, whatever it was, yeah.
But basically, they shut the government down for the period of time, and everyone was outraged.
Yeah.
The reality was that was the only time we weren't at a big deficit because
correct.
We trimmed all that fat. All the unnecessary things were cut out.
And during that
period of time.
Yeah,
yes.
And things still function from what I saw.
Right. The what was it called?
Oh, you got me.
Yeah.
You
he'll come to me. I'll interrupt our conversation here shortly. But it's proven already that little action, even though, yes, there were plenty of people that maybe got laid off or didn't work full time because they had these days that were no work days for the federal government. But it's proven that there's so much unnecessary spending, unnecessary use of money in the government. And that really outlined it. Only the essential things were being paid and functioning. And guess what? The wheels didn't fall off of anything. The government still worked. The country still worked. And we didn't have the enormous deficit just continuing to grow during that time.
Right, right.
So, well, we're going to continue talking deflation. We're also going to talk inflation because there is a huge school of thought that inflation is coming just because rates have been so low for so long. We're going to try to maybe punch some holes in that and then also discuss how these events can impact your portfolio, your life, and in debt, and in everything from top to bottom. So stick around. You listen to the Portfolio Doctors on KCBQ 1170. We'll be right back.
Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ.
Remember those warm, sun-filled days relaxing on the beach in Hawaii? Can't wait to go again? Well, now you can have a taste of Hawaii delivered to your door by going online and ordering some melt-in-your-mouth deliciousness from HawaiiFudge.com. What better way to shake off the stresses of the world than biting into a smooth, creamy chocolate macadamia nut sensation? Or how about our Kona Coffee Lava Flow? Just go to HawaiiFudge.com and place your order online today. That's HawaiiFudge.com.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, over 90 million people in the U.S. own mutual funds. Now, I wonder how many of those people have read all the fine print associated with those investments. The good news is you don't have to figure it out on your own. Let me introduce you to Dan Osgood. Dan is a certified financial planner and actually a friend. Through his website, freeinvestmentaudit.com, he will do a free risk and cost analysis for any investment portfolio you have. This free analysis will find all the hidden fees and uncover the missing money from your investments. Most people don't think they're paying any fees at all, but trust me, you definitely are. The question is, how much in fees are you paying for the investments you have? If you have a retirement account or a bond portfolio of any kind, go to freeinvestmentaudit.com right now and get your free analysis. You deserve to know what your investments are really costing you. freeinvestmentaudit.com. That's freeinvestmentaudit.com. That's freeinvestmentaudit.com.
Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ.
Welcome back. It is the Portfolio Doctors, KCBQ. My name is Dan Osgood.
And I'm Steve Bick.
Today, we've been talking a little bit deflation to start. We're going to talk deflation and inflation and the impacts it will have both in your life, your portfolio, and everything in between. But right before we left off, going into the break, mentioned a government shutdown, and that was the sequester that I was referring to. So
they furlonged 800,000 or something.
Like yes, I knew that would pop back into my head. But
there you go.
Sometimes it takes longer than it used to.
You're catching up to me now. I think the key, the discussion between inflation and deflation, people don't necessarily want to see inflation.
Right.
You know, but they've got to realize that the opposite of inflation, which is deflation, as we've been discussing, is just way more devastating.
it's much, much worse.
Yeah, if you think you're trying to get your asset values to grow, right? So you want your house value to go up. You want your stock value to go up. You want your savings to go up. You want everything to go up. Well, that only happens under an inflationary environment, unless you are one incredibly solid investor that can manage to scour some money out of the deflationary environment.
Well, if you look at our last big inflationary environment, was that under Ronald Reagan or in the 80s?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, U.S. treasuries were paying 13, 14, 15%.
Yeah, imagine how that would kill the housing market.
For the safest investment in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were trying to put the flames out there a little bit of the inflation, right? So you don't want – that's a great, great point you bring up, because the key to inflation is while you want some, you don't want a lot.
You don't want it growing out of control.
Yeah. I mean, once you cross into double digits – and admittedly, that's – I'm just talking United States here. Mm-hmm. A lot of the world functions under double-digit inflation. And it's not too bad. From 10 to 20% is almost even still manageable. It's not that hard to factor in a 2% or 1.5% increase in prices each month, because your wages start going up. Business just operates under that. Hey, it's end of month. We're raising prices. You know, everyone gets an increase, and there's a lot of money that can be made that companies can make during that time. And during that kind of an inflationary environment, hard assets like, you know, housing, stocks, things like that, I mean, they just go through the roof because everything just keeps getting more and more expensive. And so if you've got taking on some debt at that point in time isn't too bad of an idea, because the value of the houses and those prices just keep accelerating.
And that's actually kind of what led to the last recessionary period we had in 06, 07, 08, in that range. Houses were appreciating so fast.
That was ridiculous.
People were doing that. They were financing a house and selling it 6 months later at a 10% or bigger gain.
Right.
And when you're not putting any money down, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, an infinite amount of return.
Right. You rent a home for 6 months and then you sell it.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty good deal.
Yeah. And you make money. And,
right. It works great right up until it doesn't.
Exactly.
And we saw those results 08, 09, 2010.
Correct. So that's the bad side of inflation, when then it comes crashing down, right, to a more normal level. So what the Fed and everyone tries to do is they try to keep inflation around about the 2-2.5% range, which to me is a little bit low. But, hey, you know, it's America. We want our cake and eat it too over here. I mean, I would be happy to see inflation around 5%. I don't think that anything – 5 and less is to me manageable.
Right.
But then I come from South Africa and I've seen inflation almost 30% over there. And I've seen that people can deal with it over there. So we would be able to deal with it here. For some reason, we've got the screws right down on it, 2-2.5%. I mean, wow, that's hard to do. So because it's so hard to do, you get swings. If you had a wider band to your inflation target from the Fed, you probably would lower the amount of volatility in the market, because you would allow things to move a little bit more before you start cranking things down.
Right.
I mean, if we had inflation, let's say they went to 4% in the United States tomorrow, right? The Fed would jump all over that like a, you know, festering wound and try and fix it instantly by cranking interest rates up to 7-8%. And what that would do, it would just absolutely undermine any type of recovery instantly. Because firstly, stocks would just plummet.
Right.
Because why? Because people can suddenly get 6-8% in a treasury tomorrow. I tell you, our listeners would hopefully all jump all over that.
The money's moving.
Yeah. So your stock market's going to get pounded. The housing market is just cut off at the knees because the cheap financing is now gone. So if you can't afford a payment at 2.5% or 3% interest rate, you're not going to be able to come near at 8%. You'll see a lot of defaults because people who have got variable rates, suddenly their rates shoot up. So it would literally just put the brakes completely on a very tepid recovery
It would cause deflation in the housing market for sure.
Yeah. Exactly right. Exactly. So And that's only a move to 4% inflation. And to me, that's just an overreaction, but it's pretty much what would happen, right?
Right.
Whereas if they had a wider band, if they had a band to, let's say, 5%, it would be okay. Inflation's a bit high, but it's not killing anyone.
Not unmanageable.
Yeah, it's not unmanageable. Their fear is that we if we don't stop it soon, it's going to get unmanageable.
Right.
Well, it can easily remain manageable in the situation we've got because you've got so much cash floating out there that they printed, that $4 or $5 trillion, mm-hmm. if they just start sucking that money in, that would be more than enough to hold the inflation rate down in my eyes. But they wouldn't do that. So that's the one side of inflation. The other side, of which is deflation, to me is way worse because now you've got a government that's got is probably going to try and print more money, and they're
right,
going to
because that's they really can't lower rates anymore.
No. I mean, well, they could, where the 10-year could go below one.
Right, but they're not controlling that.
No.
So the rates that they control, are very low already.
Correct.
They have very small wiggle room.
Correct.
And
so you're right. So what's the only thing left? That's why the only thing left, if you go back to Keynesian economic theory, there's three basically legs to the stool. There's pump money into the economy. There's stimulate through shovel-ready projects. And we've never really done that from what I know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's always been talk about shovel-ready. I've never seen anyone with a shovel, have you?
No.
There's always like one bloke with a shovel and six guys watching him.
They're standing around
with
orange, how to use it.
Orange shirts. I've watched a whole bunch of that outside my office window because they're putting that pipeline up through Carlsbad. And they've chosen the road I have my office on to put the pipe. Mm-hmm. So we've had bad traffic for like 8 months now.
Nice.
It's great. But I've seen the one guy working and the other six standing around. But so the third part to the equation is cut taxes.
Right.
You know, I'm all for that.
I agree. I to be honest, because of all the arguments back and forth, and there's a lot of people that don't agree with that, I think a flat tax would be a solution that would work because it accomplishes everything that everyone argues about. The people that make more money would be paying more. They would be paying percentage-wise the same,
mm-hmm.
but it's a substantially larger amount of money because it's starting from a bigger
base. But the interesting part, because I was thinking about the flat tax just the other day, and the U.S. takes in about $3 trillion in taxes a year, right? That's what the Treasury brings in. Yep,
okay.
I think it's around there.
Sure.
I think we spend like $4 trillion, or maybe I got my numbers reversed. Maybe we bring in two and spend three. But anyway, it's a big number.
Mm-hmm.
You would need a flat tax of about 15%.
Right. Well, the talk that I've ever heard is like 20 or 25%.
Yeah, that would be better.
Oh, absolutely. I think if you did that, then of course you're going to hurt the CPA world because
there's not a lot
of deductions that you're going to have to ever worry about. I think it would just be no deductions, 25%, we're done.
Well, what it would do, it would kill the housing market because why buy a house now if you can rent for cheaper?
Right.
There's no point. And so that the housing market would have to just, I mean, it would just get pounded, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of the reason you buy a house is to get that tax benefit.
Right.
And if there's no tax benefit, why lock yourself into a mortgage unless you can rent it out for more? But outside of that would be killed. But I think the easiest way to just manage that whole flat tax would just be to slop 25% on as a sales tax.
Just do
straight sales tax.
Additional? Or just that's the only tax we pay?
That's it.
25% on everything you buy.
Everything you buy. Mm-hmm. So if it costs you $10 in the store and then plus tax, you're at $12.50. And you just pay $2.50 in tax.
Well, that could add up pretty substantially if you buy a
Rolls Royce.
Million-dollar home.
Yeah, or exactly.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
You've now got a $1.25 million home.
Yeah, and $250,000 went to the government.
Right.
Jeez, that was smarter.
Yes.
There wouldn't be, but I mean, so that's what I'm saying. Those types of taxes would just kill the housing market,
it.
Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. As soon as you start really digging into these flat tax issues, there's so many groups that can't do that to us. You can't. I mean, and seriously, most economic recessions occur because the housing market gets hit.
Right.
Because the add-on benefits and services and to housing, with your contractors and your landscapers and, the interior designers and your realtors and on and on and on it goes. It's so huge. It makes up a vast majority of the economy. And so if the housing market gets killed, everything's killed.
And that's where the challenge has been in this recovery. the big boom that we saw in the real estate was just investors driving prices up because they were buying up everything they could.
Yep.
And now it's kind of normalized a little bit in that it's more of a person buying to live in the house and
but
person
selling
to move.
But there was never the traction. You're right.
And it's tried to get some steam going, but the reality is it hasn't. And every single recession has been ended and led out by a return in the housing market.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen that yet. That's why we're seeing these kind of paltry growth numbers, because the economy isn't recovering, because the real estate market isn't booming. The housing market is not booming.
And it won't, because I don't think that people are that dumb. I think people know if they can feel that things aren't going right. Yep. Mm-hmm. They can feel that the economy is spluttering. They haven't seen their wages go up much in a long time. They've had a few pains of inflation, and now there's talk of deflation. And so the worst thing you can do in that economic environment is load yourself up with debt.
Right.
And I think the average Joe in the street understands that, whether they actually worked it out through the economic theories or whether they've just got street smarts and go, you know, I know that I'm not going to add any more debt. That hurt too badly.
Well, yeah, I think there's still a lot of people licking their wounds from
the
housing market crashing.
Yeah.
People that were buying houses for the right reason had to pay more than they probably wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden the value of that house is worth 50% of what they bought. And they either ended up losing it or they're still paying on a house that's worth less than what they are paying.
Well, you got to like America about that, because you could just give your house back to the bank. I mean, what's there not to love about this country when they institute things like that? I mean, this is just unbelievable to me.
We'll give you a do-over. Here you go. Just give it back. We'll take it.
They don't like to feel any pain in this country, do they?
Pass for free.
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
Well, when we come back, we'll continue talking deflation, inflation, maybe some housing, and then we'll maybe dig a little deeper into the impacts on portfolios and how this impacts your life, if either take place. And we'll also talk about something very important when it comes to inflation. Stick around. You're listening to The Portfolio Doctors, KCBQ 1170.
Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, over 90 million people in the U.S. own mutual funds. Now, I wonder how many of those people have read all the fine print associated with those investments. The good news is you don't have to figure it out on your own. Let me introduce you to Dan Osgood. Dan is a certified financial planner and actually a friend. Through his website, freeinvestmentaudit.com, he will do a free risk and cost analysis for any investment portfolio you have. This free analysis will find all the hidden fees and uncover the missing money from your investments. Most people don't think they're paying any fees at all, but trust me, you definitely are. The question is, how much in fees are you paying for the investments you have? If you have a retirement account or a bond portfolio of any kind, go to freeinvestmentaudit.com right now and get your free analysis. You deserve to know what your investments are really costing you. Freeinvestmentaudit.com. That's freeinvestmentaudit.com. That's freeinvestmentaudit.com.
Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ.
Thank you for listening. It is the Portfolio Doctors Radio Show. My name is Dan Osgood.
And I'm Steve Bick.
And today we have been talking, and first I guess I should give some of our credentials. We haven't done that today. Between us, we've got about 50 years of experience in the financial world, in pretty much all aspects of the financial world, really.
Much
you were involved
everything.
In housing, trading, bonds, stocks, options, futures.
Right. It's, yeah, pretty much everything. I even at one point bought and sold a few diamonds to see how that would work.
Wow.
Yeah. And,
I guess I didn't know that about you.
And gold coins.
And but, how'd that work?
The diamonds?
Uh-huh.
No, not well. And you know why? I found one thing out about the diamond market when I did that. You can buy a diamond, but it's so subjective, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got this. I had a couple or one in particular, a yellow diamond. So it was a fantastic looking diamond. But you would take it to a jeweler and get it appraised, and they'd give you a price, and then you take it to someone around the corner, you get a completely different value.
Right. And not even just off by a little bit.
No, I mean, we're talking about the diamond cost me about $4,500, right? And then at one point, one guy appraised it for $1,500, another guy appraised it for almost $6,000, but wouldn't buy it from me for $6,000, which just shows you how good that appraisal was. And in the end, after about a year or two, after reading all the news about how diamonds were appreciating so fast, I offloaded it for like $3,900.
Nice.
So I lost $600. And it, I don't think I'll get back in that market ever again because it's just so squirrely. But the you can see a reason for buying diamonds. I mean, if you're in like Russia or Mongolia or somewhere and you're trying to get money out of a country, you can buy like $4 or $5 million worth of diamonds that fit in the palm of your hand.
Right.
And sure, you might not get all $4 or $5 million back on the other side, but, you know, you'll probably get a big chunk of
it. You're going to get a lot more of that value somewhere else.
You know, not that I'm telling people to do that, but I'm just saying you can.
We're not advocating taking a trip to Russia and digging up diamonds.
No,
and
but I'm
flying
just
home.
Exactly. I'm just saying that was to me the only reason I could see why people would buy it, because
right.
otherwise it's just so speculative. And admittedly, I didn't know too much about it, but you know, you get your little eyeglass thing and you stare into it, and yeah. Anyway, so yeah, we've traded pretty much everything known to man.
Right. And wow. See, yeah. I learned something new every day. Today I learned about Steve. I thought, oh. Well, we've been talking probably primarily more about deflation, but inflation, there's a lot of talk out there in the media that inflation, it's coming. You need to be prepared. We're not saying it's not coming, but we're trying to give you some food for thought that it's possible they could be wrong again, as
they always are.
Typically they are. It's 80%+ of the time the experts are dead wrong.
Correct.
So that's we just want you to not buy into. That definitely they could be right for once, because every once in a while they get lucky. But the reality is you need to be doing something based on a plan that's focused around what's most important to you and really focus on that and not get caught up in what the media is saying because of the fact they're wrong so often. If you have a knee-jerk reaction to something they say, that could be very, very detrimental to what you're trying to accomplish.
Agreed. I think the theory behind inflation is you put a lot of money into an economy and at some point the asset starts rising and it's out of control. And essentially that's what happened in 2000 and it happened in 2006-07, right? And we've seen the aftermath of that. And now this time around, we've pumped way more money into the economy than we did even close to back then, right? But a couple of things to think about in that mindset is, number one, the bubble that burst, the housing bubble that burst, I remember reading in The Economist, and I do value their opinion, but they said the bubble that burst, the increase in asset value during the market growth in housing across the globe was $30 trillion in like 2 years.
Okay.
So we've tried to fill a $30 trillion hole with $4 trillion, which gives you an idea of why we're not getting anywhere, right? You probably need to triple that.
Right.
And we're not going to triple that. The rest of the world is trying to inflate, but they're also still struggling. I mean, Europe is still a basket case for many reasons that we don't need to go into right here on the show, but they are really going to have to grind that out. And mainly it's because if you think of Europe, it's now become almost a United States in terms of what they can and cannot do economically speaking, even though they've each got separate governments, which is sort of like the US, right? But it all falls under the umbrella of the EU.
Right.
And so because they're sort of handcuffed in terms of what they can do to get themselves out of a hole, it's really making the wheels turn slowly. Japan is still a mess and looks like it's going to still be a mess. China is slowing down like crazy because Europe and Japan and places, really even us, we're not buying that much from them.
I saw just in the last week or two, Australia just signed some mega, mega deal with China to
dig the rest of it. They're going to sink. I think that country's just going to sink.
They're going to take everything out of the ground.
Yeah,
it's gone.
Sink. Yeah. There's going to be like the circle around the side that keeps the water out, or maybe they just have a big dam in the middle.
One big sinkhole.
Yeah. You better go and look at Ayers Rock while it's still there before they dig it up. But yeah, so I think when you look at all of that, the idea that inflation's suddenly going to miraculously show up in the United States, where you've got the dollar appreciating like crazy. I mean, the dollar's just going up and up every day for the simple reason that the yen is seriously weak, the euro's weak, and the renminbi's becoming weak. So the only currency left really is the dollar.
Right.
So every time the dollar strengthens, it makes all the imports and all the raw materials and all the inputs to manufacturing things like copper, oil, even gold, silver, all those types of imports, they all become cheaper because we're buying them in dollar terms. So the thought, plus we've got unemployment stuck at around about 6%. It depends what number you look at, but let's assume it's around there.
Want to believe.
Yeah. So you've got a lot of capacity there. You haven't had much in the way of wage increases, you know, and for years.
Right.
And so the thought that inflation is just going to suddenly start ripping up, I don't see it. I just don't see it. So to me, that leaves you've either going to have to just mire along at 1% to 2% inflation growth for the next 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 10 years because maybe you're just stuck in this hole. And or you've got deflation, which we were discussing earlier, that's really bad.
Right.
And so in that environment, the idea of acquiring tons of asset type things like houses, like stocks, though getting into debt, all three of those are just, to me, off the table. You just don't do it. Now, you buy a house if it's a rental property and you can actually rent it out and make some cash flow. But this right now in this environment, and for me, what I see in the next few years, cash flow and cash is king.
Mm-hmm.
You need cash and cash flow. You don't even really need to do that good of a job of investing it because you're not going to be really losing much to inflation. But if and when a bubble bursts or the real estate market crashes or the stock market crashes, you're ready to scoop things up at a bargain. And the other side of it is, if you're in debt now and we do hit deflation, you're going to be upside down in no time. Yeah, so the risks are just...
It shouldn't be that far out of your mind of what went on just a couple of years back. It was still going on 2010 for sure. 2011, it was still around a little bit, but it was starting to go away. But that situation, and I don't want to see anyone have to go through that situation again where you own a house at one number and... 6 months later, it's worth half of that number, and you still have to make those payments.
Now, that's why people think I'm sort of crazy, and maybe I am, you know, to some degree, I'm sure I am. But let's assume you're thinking of putting $200,000 down on your million-dollar purchase in San Diego. And yes, I know, the wife wants it because she wants to have a cutesy place for the kids to grow up and memories and all of that. But, I'm going to take that. To me, irrational. Maybe women say it's rational, but I'm going to say from a financial standpoint, it's a little bit of an irrational argument in the financial world, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you took that 200 grand, you could go to, Ohio or Florida or there's places all over the country, Tennessee, Kentucky, and you could probably snap up 5 houses, maybe 8 with that 200 grand.
Okay.
And you could probably rent those for between $500 and $700 a month. So you're going to be bringing in about $2,500 a month rental income. And by the way, you've got those things free and clear. You owe nobody.
Right. That's a cash purchase. That's not
exactly.
A financing. That's not a down payment on 5 or 8 different properties.
So now you've got 10 to 12% return a year on that 200 grand. And if everything goes upside down, it really doesn't matter to you.
Right.
You don't have the stress.
If your rent lowers, you still have the cash flow, just
correct.
Not as much.
Exactly. And you can either plow that $2,500 a month back into buying more properties, or you can let it build up for the next 2 or 3 years. Next thing, in about 3 years, you've got another 100 grand built up from that cash flow stream, right? And then by then, if the market's fallen to pieces or you find something, now that cash flow stream is funding your house. Now you've taken the risk off the table.
Right.
That, I mean, that to me, particularly in this environment where we are now, That's what I'm talking about, the cash flow stream. That's what you want. You want to see that cash flow stream coming in, because that's going to really protect you in the long run. You don't want to take on this massive debt burden and then you lose your job and now what?
Right.
The other way around, you lose your job and you still got the $2,500 a month coming in, you know? So plus that'll go up if inflation goes up.
Right. Yeah, that we haven't even started talking about inflation and the different things you can use there.
Well, yeah, an inflation investment's a whole separate one.
Right. So we will get into that coming up. We'll talk about if inflation does start showing its head, things you can do to protect yourself and ways to just have a bright future and be very comfortable that it's going to stay bright regardless of what the economic conditions are. So you are listening to The Portfolio Doctors, KCBQ 1170. We'll be right back.
Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ.
Business owners, are you tired of using multiple software solutions to run your business? Are you sick of the constant updates and having to pay your IT staff or a third-party company to manage your software systems? If you can answer yes to any of these questions, then you need Lead Commerce. Lead Commerce is a cloud-based software system that runs your entire business, from your website to e-commerce to inventory, purchasing, and order management. Lead Commerce does it all. For a free 15-day trial of Lead Commerce, log on to LeadCommerce.com. That's www.leadcommerce.com. Start your free trial today. You'll be glad you did.
Remember those warm, sun-filled days relaxing on the beach in Hawaii? Can't wait to go again? Well, now you can have a taste of Hawaii delivered to your door by going online and ordering some melt-in-your-mouth deliciousness from HawaiiFudge.com. What better way to shake off the stresses of the world than biting into a smooth, creamy chocolate macadamia nut sensation? Or how about our Kona Coffee Lava Flow? Just go to HawaiiFudge.com and place your order online today. That's HawaiiFudge.com.
Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ.
Welcome back. It is the Portfolio Doctors Radio Show. My name is Dan Osgood.
And I'm Steve Bick.
I really haven't mentioned how you can get a hold of us. We do have all of our prior shows are available on iTunes. They are also available through our website, theportfoliodoctors.com. Go there, look at the archives, and we have a small summary of what the show was about listed. So if there's something that interests you, go ahead, click on that. You can listen. If that sparks any questions, we are here as a resource. We want you to reach out. Many of our shows are designed around questions we have received, where if it's a good topic, someone asks a question to expand on a topic, or if it created an idea from that topic, we welcome any and all questions, comments, and we want to provide the best quality information we can for our listeners. So again, that's theportfoliodoctors.com is our website. You can access iTunes. You can also email either of us directly. You can email Steve. It's steve@theportfoliodoctors.com. Or you can email me, dan@theportfoliodoctors.com. So we've talked on deflation quite a bit.
Right.
Talked a little bit about inflation, the difference between the two. And you just talked about some of the things that would be great ideas if we were in a deflationary period.
Or even if we were just going sideways and inflation remained low.
Well, cash kind of always is king.
Well, except in an inflationary environment.
Full inflation.
Yeah, if you had like a 4% to 6% inflation rate that's just ticking along, you'd want to get that cash invested right away for the simple reason that you being chewed up, you're losing 6% a year on that money.
The reality is if inflation's that high, you're going to be able to get a CD at a bank at 4 or 6%.
So, yeah, exactly. So you should be able, it shouldn't be hard to find investments.
At least park it there for the safety and just to kind of plug along.
Exactly right. But yeah, an inflationary environment, assuming you're expecting inflation, that's when you should be in the stock market. I mean, so if you truly believe that inflation is here and it's coming in and it's going to happen next year, 2015 is the start of inflation, then I'd say that the market's looking pretty cheap right about now because at that point it's going to take off. And so is housing and so is everything else. But the problem is that you just don't, to me, you just don't have the economic, you know, platform for that growth to occur. But maybe inflation is the shot in the arm that it needs.
Right. You never know what that trigger will be. And maybe a little bit of inflation is just what it's looking for.
Well, it is what it's looking for, but we just can't seem to find it, right? Yeah. That's the problem.
Well, and with that, like what you mentioned, the real estate properties. Yeah. On the flip side, it's a great investment for a deflationary period because it is cash flow. In an inflationary environment, it's kind of the same.
It should work.
Even better because that's kind of an inflation-proof investment because you're charging a certain amount of rent. If rents are increasing, guess what? You can increase the rent. You're not stuck with just the $500 a month rent payment.
Well, plus the value of the property is going up.
Right. So you're winning in two avenues where in deflation, you're just getting that cash flow. The house probably is going down in value, mm-hmm. but if you own it free and clear, there's no debt issue. On the inflation side, for just a small down payment, if it was a big house that you're renting, it's growing at a high percentage.
Yeah, no, look, I think housing works in both markets, mm-hmm. to be honest. The difference between the deflationary housing investment versus the inflationary housing investment is during deflation, which is sort of where we're hovering right about now, you don't want to have any debt.
Right.
Because if things do go down and the value of the house goes down and rental incomes go down and everything goes down, you're going to be
your cash flow is a debt flow.
Correct. You can't service it, right? Whereas during an inflationary environment, you just leverage the max out of those properties.
Right.
And that is really the key difference. And it's just debt.
Right.
And that's the biggest concern, really, that I have for all of the stimulus. Yeah, we've pumped money and money and money and money and money. We've got nowhere. But now what the story is that, you know, you've still got that debt. And if prices are starting to turn around, let's say your two wins were housing and the stock exchange. If those two basically unravel, now you spent all this money, you still owe it all back.
Right.
But you've got nothing for your investment, per se, in the government's eyes. And that's the problem I see. I mean, that's really to be – as one – I write a blog every week, and one of my readers last week came back with a great comment. He said, it's not this how much money's invested. It's just that it's not managed properly.
Right.
So – and I've said this repeatedly on the show is if we had taken $4 trillion and we had dumped the whole $4 trillion – into shovel-ready projects, you'd basically have inflation, unemployment would be fixed,
right?
Admittedly, a lot of it would be menial work, but not all of it. I mean, so you would, and you'd probably have the whole country Wi-Fi'd up or whatever it would be, or whatever you want to choose. I mean, all the airports.
There could be solar projects covering the entire country.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or wind, or whatever you wanted, or, you know, all the airports would be upgraded, all the airports. All towers would be upgraded. All the bridges would be fixed. All these types of things would be done, right? The economy would just be jamming.
Well, the other thing we talked about is if they would have taken those same dollars and just given a check to every citizen in the
U.S. That was the next thing I was going to say, yeah.
The economy would be out of control right now.
Yeah, could you imagine?
Right.
Just give us all $4 trillion?
Right.
I mean, how many are there? There's like 300 million
we've calculated it would have been
a lot.
Very significant. Like,
Ten grand a piece, $15,000 a person, I think. Yeah. $15,000 a person. So if you've got a family of, let's say, six, I mean, you're going to get $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the key, right, to that whole discussion. Think about it. Most upper class, you know, wealthy families only have two to three.
Right.
One kid, maybe two, right? They typically don't have four, six kids. People who have 6, 8, 10 kids are typically relatively on the lower level end of the earning spectrum. Mm-hmm. Those guys would be getting the $150,000. What an impact would that make?
Much larger impact.
Yeah. Whereas the guys who are on the high end of the equation, they're going to get $30,000 and really wouldn't have made a difference to them anyway.
Drop in the bucket.
Exactly. And they could have even said, you know what, we'll give out $4 trillion, but anyone who earned more than $250,000 last year gets nothing.
Right.
That means the guys at the bottom get even more.
Right.
Seriously, you want to see an economy stimulated?
Yeah.
You know? Or on the third thing you could have done is just said, you know what, we'll just do a tax moratorium for a year. No one pays any
taxes.
For a year.
Right?
Because that's $4 trillion or $2 trillion, or maybe you could have no tax for 2 years. For the next 2 years, no one pays any tax. Could you imagine?
That's why neither of us will ever want to be elected, but mainly neither of us would ever run for election, so it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, but I mean, though, both of those things would work.
Yes, absolutely.
And it would have the exact same dollar value as the $4 trillion mm-hmm. that they basically gave to the banks and spent
without the unknown negative possibilities.
Exactly.
So.
And during the time when there's no taxes, we'll hack government down big time because we can't afford to really pay people.
Right.
And hey, presto, when we come out the other side, we lean
They're out
mean.
In the private sector taking the jobs that are now being created because of all the stimulus.
Wow, we fixed the economy.
It was that easy.
And who thought the portfolio doctors just did investments? We can fix anything.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, one of the aspects, we've talked about this in the past, and I think this is very important to bring up again. When you hear this talk of inflation, inflation could be here in a big number, and it may have no impact on you.
Correct.
In your life. And what we've talked about in the past with this is your own personal inflation rate and what that is, because that's the only thing you need to pay attention to. It doesn't matter if they announce, say, oh, inflation's at 6%.
Right.
If your personal inflation rate hasn't changed or is only up 1% during that same time, is that really impactful to your life? And when we talk about that, the examples you gave, a great example the last time is the cost of gas going up has no impact to your life. So there is no effect on your personal inflation rate because you live a mile or two from where you work. So
right.
You can almost walk if you needed to. If gas got up to $30 a gallon, it would have zero impact on you because you could walk if you needed or ride a bike.
Cycle, mm-hmm. but there's a hill.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't.
You hitchhike.
That would be safe.
Hey, where are you going? Right to the top of the hill.
Yeah, exactly.
But those types of things, you have to factor in where like, say, a salesman of some type, that they have a route that's all of Southern California.
Correct.
Well, there's a lot of companies that don't cover the gas bill anymore, or they give you a small stipend for it. It's having that type of thing. Gas going up is having a huge impact on them, their personal inflation.
Well, once again, though, I mean, you can still, even then, and this is a good example, because even then you can adjust your inflation rate real quick by going and buying a hybrid, for example, and whacking that gas problem in half versus maybe buying a big truck or something. And so, I mean, there are ways to manipulate your own personal inflation rate.
Right.
You know, you just have to work out how. I mean, some places you can't really. Like, I just had this year-end insurance audit thing, UPD, you know, where now suddenly my health insurance premiums are almost going to double.
Right.
So there's almost nothing you can do about that except, you know, earn less money, which really, you know, why would I want to do that?
Right.
So, you know, there are certain things that you do get caught with, but definitely, as you say, your own personal inflation rate can manipulate it.
Right.
You know, maybe you don't eat out every day of the week. You cook more meals at home or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, there's definitely ways, and whether that's going in and looking at a budget or just looking at what's being factored in as inflation.
Right.
I mean, we talk about it all the time. The numbers they report aren't extremely accurate just because they're not factoring in some of the largest inflationary items.
Well, think about it. It's almost impossible. They're trying to put an inflation number on the entire country when all of our inflation rates are different.
Right, yeah.
So how are you going to do an average of that is impossible.
Left coast, right coast.
Yeah.
Much different than middle America.
Agreed.
And that number averages out to where you're maybe seeing what middle America is seeing. But, I mean, the reality was, what was inflation back in 06, 07? Roughly what it is now.
Yeah.
2%. Yet housing.
I know.
That was growing at 10 or 20% a year.
That was crazy, wasn't it?
You can't tell me that 2% was accurate here.
No.
Not in San Diego, for sure.
Well, that's the thing. And when they talk about low inflation and you can look around and you can see things that are through the roof, like my medical bills and things like that. But then on the flip side, you've got the offset of the lower gas prices. So that's how they try and blend the inflation rate. So, you know, you've really got to try to understand it. You've got to look at your own personal spending patterns to see really what is causing you the problem.
Right. And we can refer back to the most fun index that I still believe is one of the more accurate ones.
You love that one.
The Big Mac Index.
Yeah.
Which the reality is the cost of a Big Mac has appreciated at about 5.2% per year since the recession back in 2008.
So we had 5% according to that.
Right. And if you look
that's
at
if
it,
you
the
buy
reality
Big Macs.
Of a big, well, whether you buy them or not, the reality is the cost of a Big Mac factors in just about every moving part there is to life. There's travel expenses. There's agriculture. There's real estate. There's gasoline. You name it, it's all tied to the cost of a Big Mac because that's such a big company.
Surprised people still buy Big Macs. Are they any good?
No, I haven't had one in years.
So I thought you were going to say I have one every week.
Oh. I had one on the way
in. Yeah, exactly right.
Nope. Well, again, if as we're talking about this, if you need some help kind of looking at what your personal inflation rate might be and what some of the factors are you would add in, we are here as a resource. You can reach either of us directly via email. You can call Steve or email steve@theportfoliodoctors.com, or you can email myself, dan@theportfoliodoctors.com. Don't forget to check out our podcasts on iTunes. Listen to some of our old shows if today was the first time you heard us. Thank you again for listening. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You've been listening to The Portfolio Doctors on News Talk AM 1170 KCBQ in San Diego. To schedule a financial health check, go to theportfoliodoctors.com. Or to speak with Dan Osgood, Steve Bick, or any guest on this program, please call 858-764-7250. That's 858-764-7250. Learn more about the show online at theportfoliodoctors.com. Portfolio Doctors are Dan Osgood and Stephen Bick, investment advisor representatives for their respective investment firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed on the Portfolio Doctors are their own. They do not reflect those of ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management Company LLC, or this radio station. The information you heard is for educational purposes only. No listener should assume that the discussions serve as a substitute for personal advice from ACAS LLC or Cottingham Management Company LLC. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice.
The Portfolio Doctors on KCBQ is sponsored by Mr. Credit San Diego.